and it is 10 a.m. You are tuned to KBOO Portland. And as you heard, Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we'll hear an interview about a protest action this morning by Portland Rising Tide in Northwest Portland. And we'll hear an excerpt from the series Between the Lines on a new report from Public Citizens Congress Watch titled Outside Spenders, Local Elections. And also coming up this morning, Stephanie Potter will be guest host for Locus Focus. And at 11, there's a special edition of Health and Healthcare Forum with host Roberta Hall. She interviews investigative journalist David K. Johnston about healthcare inequality. And I want to thank KBOO members for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a current member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate today. Now, let's listen to this before we go to our 10 a.m. program.
This single independent radio station is searching for the 10x10 pop-up of our dreams. Must love travel, the outdoors, music festivals, and live remote radio broadcasts. If you can spare the canvas structure we're craving, call us at 503-231-8732 to donate today. Run away with us to our community radio station, KBOO.
And now, local climate activists from Portland Rising Tide blockaded an oil terminal today, demanding a halt to crude by rail traffic in the Northwest. KBOO's Kathleen Stevenson spoke with Emma Gould of Portland Rising Tide earlier this morning about what happened.
A woman today locked her arm to a barrel filled with concrete on some rail lines that are headed into the ARC logistics facility.
Where is that?
Down here. I'm down here in Northwest Industrial Portland. In the industrial district, Northwest Portland, right near the Columbia River.
She locked her arm, and then what happened?
Great. Well, she locked her arm to a concrete barrel on the rail lines and blockaded all oil by rail traffic into the ARC Logistics Terminal. That facility has been operating since January 2014, and it's an oil distribution terminal, and it handles oil traveling by rail. Oil by rail has increased by 250% in 2013 in the state of Oregon. It's vastly increased. Much of it comes from destructive fracking technology. And she was down here blockading that oil by rail traffic into that facility. We think that no oil trains are safe under any conditions. And we think that any oil taken out of the ground is going to be burned. None of it is safe. No transport of oil is safe in the era of climate change.
What has been the reaction? Are there officials there from ARC Logistics?
Absolutely. Well, people have been down here since about 5 this morning. The woman who locked herself to the barrel and the tracks has just been cut out of the barrel and arrested. And there's been about a dozen people down here supporting her. Those people are clearing out too here. A lot of cops on the scene clearing the area and some news reporters as well.
What would you hope would be the outcome of this action?
Yeah, well, the action today was to stop oil car transport into the ARC logistics facility. I think eventually that we hope that they will stop transporting oil by rail in the Pacific Northwest and elsewhere.
Emma, is there anything else that you think is important to tell us about the action today?
Just that there was a lot of people down here in a beautiful Portland morning. No burning of oil is safe on a burning planet.
And next we're going to... that was Emma Gould of Portland Rising Tide speaking with KBOO's Kathleen Stevenson earlier this morning. The ARC Logistics Terminal, which began operation in January, is one piece of infrastructure built for increased oil production. When construction is completed, the facility will have the capacity to transport over 16,000 barrels of oil per day. And now, Between the Lines, on Outside Spenders and Local Elections.
Mm-hmm. After the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission case in 2010, the floodgates of unlimited and unaccountable money from corporations and unions in U.S. politics were open wide, very wide. But while many progressive activist groups, which opposed the high court decision, traced the exponential increase of money influencing the outcome of federal elections, there was little attention being paid to the effect the Citizens United ruling had on local politics. A new report from Public Citizens Congress Watch, titled Outside Spenders, Local Elections, tracks the impact of large amounts of money targeting local elections given by the conservative political advocacy group Americans for Prosperity, which was founded by the billionaire brothers Charles and David Koch. The report focuses on six local elections in which Americans for Prosperity injected funds and organizers to pursue its agenda of reducing government spending, lowering taxes, weakening labor unions, making the judicial system more friendly to big business, and opposing environmental regulations. The local elections examined in the report included school board elections in Kenosha, Wisconsin and Douglas County, Colorado, a mayor's race in Lakeview, Minnesota, city and county elections in Coralville, Iowa and Iron County, Wisconsin, and a zoo tax referendum in Columbus, Ohio. Your reporter spoke with Adam Crowther, a researcher with Public Citizens Congress Watch and author of the report. Here he outlines how outside money and local political contests have hijacked issues of concern to these communities and what can be done to place limits on how money is raised and spent on elections.
As more and more reports were sort of trickling in about spending by sort of these national groups in local elections, we sort of want to take a deeper dive into, you know, what's actually going on. And we centered our research around one particular group, which is Americans for Prosperity, which is one of sort of the many groups that are presumably funded by the Koch brothers, Charles and David Koch. And so we started doing news clip searches, sort of saying, you know, where is Americans for Prosperity spending? What elections are they getting involved in? And we found a number of sort of hyper-local races across the country. I think the smallest sort of race we found was a county in sort of northern Wisconsin called Iron County. There's only 6,000 people that live there, and Americans for Prosperity, which in 2012 had $115 million in revenue, was sending out mailers and canvassing on behalf of essentially a mining company that wanted to open an open pit mine there. And so it was just really surprising the degree to which, you know, this group is engaging in these elections that, you know, a couple of years ago you'd have never expected to see a national group. And so it's something that is increasingly surprising. And I think when we think about how local elections should be conducted, it's very surprising.
It seems like from reading the summary of your report, it appears that anti-union activity is really at the heart of some of what the Koch brothers are targeting in these elections.
I think that's right. In one of the races in Douglas County, Colorado, it was a school board race. And Americans for Prosperity spent about $350,000 to preserve the sitting board, which had taken actually a lot of steps to weaken teachers' unions in the county. Another case in Kenosha, Wisconsin in 2014, the sitting school board had actually agreed to negotiate a contract with the teachers union there, which had presumably been banned by recent legislation in Wisconsin. A third case up in Lakeview, Minnesota, which is a pretty small city up there, a candidate for mayor who had previously served on city council voted to preserve a part-time unionized electrician job while he was on city council, which was the sole justification for Americans for Prosperity engaging in that particular race.
Has there been a backlash effect, such as these large, well-funded political organizations coming into a small town where opponents of what these groups are doing can point out and say, these folks don't even live here. They don't even live in our town, and they're trying to influence these elections. Has there been any kind of reversals they've suffered because of it?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. I think when you look at the actual results of the elections, it's about a wash. Of the six elections we looked at closely, I think you could reasonably say that, you know, Americans for Prosperity, their preferred candidates or their preferred policy position, they won out about half the time in three of the cases. And the other three, they were sort of a little bit less successful. But what you do see sort of percolating out of the surface of these races is a sentiment among local citizens of, you know, why is this group here? Sort of local elections are sort of the last sort of bastion of pure democracy in a lot of ways. It's friends and family who are running for office. And I think that one of the bigger issues is that issues that are really important to local citizens are being pushed aside a little bit when the terms of the debate are shifted because America's prosperity can drop $350,000. It really, I think, upsets the sort of the balance of how local elections are run.
Just a last question for you here. What's the remedy for this, in your view? With the Supreme Court ruling, how can citizens reform the campaign finance system to limit the outsized influence of millionaires and billionaires like the Koch brothers and these giant corporations? There is a high degree of difficulty in passing what many groups are working for, which is a constitutional amendment that would override what the Supreme Court let loose there in terms of the Citizens United decision, releasing unregulated and unaccountable money.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think we've actually reached the point where we sort of have to call for a constitutional amendment. The Supreme Court recently, and Citizens United and McCutcheon have sort of redefined what the First Amendment means. They basically said that spending on elections, contributing to elections, influencing politics is a protected form of speech. It's in the Constitution. And so at this point, the only way to really try to roll that back is to change the Constitution, is to, you know, add an amendment to the Constitution that basically says that Congress, you know, state legislatures can pass reasonable limits on how much money can be raised and spent in politics. To basically let Congress have more control over what's going on in our elections right now. You know, a couple of years ago, it would have seemed maybe a little bit crazy that we would need a constitutional amendment to sort of govern our elections. But I think the spending has gotten so out of control that it's actually one of the last options we have left.
That was Adam Crowther, a researcher with Public Citizens Congress Watch and author of the report titled Outside Spenders, Local Elections. Find links to the report and related articles by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Tune in to KABU for the 27th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival. KABU will again broadcast the entire festival from noon to 10 p.m., July 3rd through the 6th. The broadcast will also be carried by various stations of Oregon Community Media for statewide coverage of this Oregon Food Bank Benefit Festival. Again, July 3rd through the 6th, noon to 10 p.m. each day here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And this KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Bees Space Movement and Expressive Arts Studio, hosting the Life Art Being Integrative Arts Festival, a week of practicing presence with the self, the body, and earth, July 7th through 12th at B Space and Portland Shambhala Center. Life Art Being includes authentic movement, Shambhala art, deep ecology practices, and more. Information at b-space.org/lifeartbeing.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. This is Locus Focus. I'm Stephanie Potter, acting as guest host today. I'm sitting in for Barbara Bernstein. My guest today, Hank Patton, is someone who envisions a world where resources are basically managed as if the future mattered. He's coming here from the Columbia Gorge. He also brought his daughter, Amelia Patton Hall, with him.
Amiel.
I keep saying that wrong. Amiel. And he's founded something 30 years ago called World Steward at the mouth of the Little White Salmon River in the Columbia Gorge. And the center apparently is offering educational opportunities in the stewardship of farm and forest land. And he's also into promoting local economies there and fostering community. World Steward is also fostering intergenerational finance. And Amory Lovins, who's the chairman, chief environmental scientist of the Rocky Mountain Institute, has called this intergenerational finance perhaps the most important new idea to enter economic thought in this century. It's pretty amazing. IGF, it's also called that, has the potential to harness trillions of dollars, I believe, for sustainable business practices and infrastructure. So I want to talk about all of this with you today, and hopefully we can make it all make sense.
That's an ambitious goal.
Right. So anyway, Hank, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
And welcome, Amiel.
Thank you.
Okay. So I read about what you and your friends have been doing in the gorge these last, I guess it's actually almost 40 years. It's beyond 30.